All right, guys. Good morning. It's good to see all y'all people out here. Oh, I didn't see you. No, I'm sorry. I wouldn't have said that. No. I'm just kidding. I love you, Nate. You're a great guy, man. I love you. All right. So going back to kind of recap what we talked about. So at first we talked about establishing the fact that truth exists, right? And if truth exists, we should know the truth. And so the truth is, when it comes to God, either A, God exists, or B, God does not exist. One of those has to be true. So we went through some arguments to prove that God exists. So as a kind of a quick recap, from the cosmological argument, we know that he is self-existent, timeless, non-spatial, immaterial, because he created time, space, and matter, so he must exist outside of that. In other words, he is without limits. He is infinite. He's unimaginably powerful, since he created the entire universe out of nothing, and he's very personal. He chose to convert a state of nothingness into the time, space, material universe, and an impersonal force would have no ability to make that choice. From the teleological argument, we know that God is supremely intelligent, since he designed life in the universe with such incredible complexity and precision. And he's purposeful, since he designed the many forms of life to live in this specific and ordered environment. And from the moral argument, we know that God is absolutely morally pure. He is the unchangeable standard of morality by which all actions are measured. And this standard includes infinite justice and infinite love. Now, such a God would be described by theism, okay? So what that means is, so we talk about atheism, right? Atheism is no God. Theism is there is one God, okay? And this kind of proves it in and of itself. You can only have one infinite being. And when we talk about infinite, we're not just talking about longevity, okay? We aren't just talking about time. We're talking about infinite, infinite power, infinite size, infinite. You can't have two truly infinite beings. You can only have one. So by virtue of that fact alone, we have eliminated many of the world's religions. So ones that could not possibly be true based on the argument that we've just made: Hinduism, Buddhism, New Age, secular humanism, Mormonism, Wiccan, Taoism, Confucianism, or Shinto. And I don't know a few of those, but I do know a few of those. But all of those subscribe to the fact that there could be multiple gods, or that there is no God. For example, in Hinduism, we don't really exist because we're all part of one indistinguishable reality called Brahman. So we've already eliminated all of those, and it really brings it down to three possibilities: Judaism, Christianity, or Islam. One of those three has to be true. And the great thing about this is we've arrived at this conclusion without using any religious source material. This is all based on science, observation, right, historical information. So none of this has been a quote-unquote religious belief, okay? But now we are going to have to figure out, okay, if there is a God, which one is he, okay? And so there's what we've determined, the theistic God that we've discovered, is consistent with the God of the Bible. Yeah. Doesn't prove it's the God of the Bible, but it's consistent with the God of the Bible, okay? And so when we talk about the God of the Bible, there are questions about miracles. There are questions about, why doesn't he just reveal himself to us? Why doesn't he take away all doubt? And I've watched this video before. I'm going to cheat here and take about 6.5 minutes to show you guys this video. But it's way better than how I could go into it. And it intros this next part of what we're going to talk about really well. So you guys just bear with me and watch this video.
A lot of us will ask if there is a God and God can do anything. then why doesn't he just show himself? Then I would believe. Then everyone would believe. This whole you got to have faith thing just seems like a lot of games. Well, it's true. God could reveal himself in any way he wants. So the question is, what would be the best way to do it? But before we can answer that, we have to ask, why would God want to reveal himself to us in the first place? And I think the answer is simple. Think about it. Even if you were a God and you created people, why would you want to reveal yourself to them? Would it be just so that they would believe in you? Or so they could know you, have a relationship, and open up some sort of connection between you and them? So then the question is, if there is a God, what would be the best way to reveal himself so that you and I could know him? Well, how would you do it? You could just pull back the curtain and reveal yourself as is. But I don't think we'd be quite ready for that yet. And I don't think I could relate to a being that's so far beyond me in every single way. You could cause all kinds of cosmic signs and wonders. Like, I don't know, big cosmic signs and wonders. And these would probably work for a little while, but let's be honest, people are fickle. And after the 20th or 30th cosmic wonder, we'd be like, oh good, the sun disappeared again, as I'm driving to work, in the dark, again. And there's nothing personal about some cold cosmic force. You could come up with a way to reveal yourself to every single person who ever walked the face of the earth, individually. But doesn't this seem a little door-to-door salesman?
Hey, how's it going?
And when would you do it? At what age? For how long? Would you just show up in someone's life, physically, spiritually, a voice in the head? And just for clarity and continuity, if you're going to reveal yourself, doesn't it make more sense just to do it once and for everybody, rather than billions and billions and billions of times? I'm sure you could very easily just make everyone know you by infusing yourself into their brains, which means no freedom for us. But you can't force a relationship. Who does that? I mean, would you rather your spouse choose you out of their own, I don't know, free choice? Or because you somehow altered their mind and will? Or you could just become one of them. Cross over into their time and space, their history, and take on all those little things that make us human. Which one of these do you think would be the best way to reveal yourself? And if you do become one of them, you could go as anyone you want. A king, a political ruler, a powerful CEO, a superhuman, someone born in that thing you feed your animals out of. I don't know about you, but I know which one I'm following. But is that enough? I mean, you can't just show up in history and start telling everyone you're God.
Hey, I'm God.
People would either think you're out of your mind crazy or just 100%. You'd need something else. What if you pre-announced that you were coming? You could inspire a bunch of different writers from different times and different places, all to write about you long before your foot ever hit the ground. In fact, you'd be the only human being in the history of the world ever to be pre-announced. But is that enough? I mean, obviously everything you said and did would be absolute, but we don't always get it.
Huh?
We like signs and wonders to confirm things. So maybe you could do some kind of great signs and wonders to confirm things. Why doesn't God just show himself? Now, I know some of you are thinking, yeah, but that was 2,000 years ago. I wasn't there. Do you think God is bound by space and time? Do you think your mind and your soul is bound by space and time? And I know some of you may not believe in any of this, and that's your choice. But what if there's a chance that God walked on the face of this earth as a human being?
So if you're like me, all the pauses drive me crazy, right? So that video could have taken about half the time that it did. But I thought the points were very well thought out, right? So because you hear that argument all the time, well, you know, if God exists, you know, why doesn't he just pop up and say, hey, I'm here, right? Well, I mean, if he did, you know, so okay. We've talked about this before. I can't remember if we talked about it in this series or not. But they talk about, you know, well, he could do cosmological signs and wonders and, you know, all those things. And then eventually we would just be like, oh, well, that's just another thing. That's the universe we live in. Yeah. Right? He already did it. He did all the cosmological signs and wonders. We see them every day. Right. But they're just part of our life. Yes. And so there's no, we don't assign any type of relevance or significance to it, right? It's just, oh, well, that's just part of life. Yeah. Whereas everything we've gone over for the last 7 weeks is all miraculous. It's the fact that life even exists on this planet is miraculous. Every day that you're alive is a miracle, but we take it for granted. So, anyway, does anybody have any thoughts about what we just saw? Any comments? No thoughts? Anything? No. Okay, so. No, go ahead.
This is probably not real great on my part, but I don't think that I've realized that he's the only one that was quote unquote pre-announced. I believe that the people of Islam, at least that I've heard before, was that their God was the God that was pre-announced. And so you think that that would kind of tip the scales a little bit when we're talking about, do you believe in Christ or do you believe in Buddha or do you believe in, you know, whomever? To me, that feels like that tips the scales a little bit, you know, because whether they were influenced by that God or not, they literally foretold of the coming of the Christ and then he came. I mean, that's pretty.
Except the people of Islam believe that Muhammad was a prophet. Okay, they think it would be that for God to become a man would be blasphemous. So they don't believe God became a man. Yeah, that.
Okay, so, so it talks about here how does God communicate with us? Perhaps God manifested himself in some way to a select group of people over many centuries and inspired them to write down what they witnessed and heard from him. Written language is a precise medium of communication that can be easily duplicated and passed on to succeeding generations. Yet, it can also be easily ignored by those who freely decide they don't want to be bothered with God. So, a book would work as a valid but not overpowering means of communication from God. But whose book? God communicate through the book of the Jews, the book of the Christians, the book of the Muslims. How are we supposed to tell which book, if any, is really a message from God? Well, there's a thing called the King's Seal. So before communication like we know it today, right? All long distance messages were sent by hand, and a king, typically with a ring, would put a wax seal on a letter or communication that he sent out so that when the person received it, they would know two things. One, it came from him, and two, that it had not been opened or altered or changed in any way, okay? And so in order for this to work, the seal needed to be unusual, unique, easily recognizable, and something only the king possessed. Well, God used a similar system to authenticate his messages, miracles. Miracles are unusual, unique, easily recognizable, and only God can do them. They are a special act of God that interrupts the normal cause of events. A miracle is something which would never have happened had nature, as it were, been left to its own devices. So, natural laws describe what happened regularly by natural causes. Miracles describe what happened rarely by supernatural causes. An example it uses in here is our world is like a box. So if you had two boxes, one was closed, and you can't see in, you can't reach in, you can't do anything. But the relationship of God to our world, to our box, is the top is open. And he can see in, and he can reach in, and he can manipulate it and change it however he wants to. He has the power to do that. Now, he chooses when and if he wants to do that. But he can. So, so this is really cool. That's kind of what I just mentioned. But miracles are not only possible, we know they're actual because the greatest miracle of all, the creation of the universe out of nothing, has already occurred. So, with regards to the Bible, if Genesis 1:1 is true, then every other miracle in the Bible is easy to believe. Right? Because once he's created the universe out of nothing, can he not do whatever he wants with it? Can he not bring fire down from heaven, keep a man safe in a great fish for 3 days, predict future events, turn water into wine, heal diseases instantaneously, raise the dead? If he created everything, would he not have the ability to do that? So what's funny is, you know, we can look at these miracles and we can be skeptical, but the truth is that they're way easier to believe than the universe was created out of nothing. So if we can go back and we can prove scientifically that that happened, all these other miracles they're nothing. They pale in comparison. Does that make sense? So there are a few objections to the existence of miracles. One is that natural laws are immutable. So basically, this is logically explained as miracles are violations of natural law. That's one. Two, natural laws are immutable. Three, it is impossible to violate immutable laws, so therefore miracles are impossible. But that's not true. So, for example, when a baseball player catches a falling baseball, he is overpowering the force of gravity. We do the same when we fly planes or blast off into space. In such cases, gravity itself is not changed. It is simply overpowered. So if finite beings like us can overpower natural forces, then certainly the infinite being that created those forces can do that. Yeah. Right? So that argument makes no sense. Another argument is that miracles are not credible. So there's a guy, David Hume, he has an argument. And he basically says, Okay, so his argument is, one, natural law is by definition a description of a regular occurrence. Two, a miracle is a definition of rare occurrence. Three, the evidence for the regular is always greater than that for the rare. Four, a wise man always bases his belief on the greater evidence. Five, therefore a wise man should never believe in miracles. Okay, so basically what it's saying is, exactly. So if something, what he's basically saying is if there is rare, less evidence of something happening because it doesn't happen very often, then you would be foolish to believe it happened. Is because there's more evidence for what could have happened as opposed to what did. Does that make sense? Do you see what I'm saying? We have some people. Let's just, it gives some really good examples. So let's talk about this. So if I go play golf, now, I don't think there's nobody in this room that's played golf with me, but the people that have, well, I meant besides my wife. Okay, you're right. Callan has been. Okay, you don't count. You're my wife. You can. No, listen. For this example. No. No, listen. For. Okay. Oh, Lord. I'm going to die tonight. All right. No, in this example for what I'm about to say. Because my wife loves me, and she would say anything if I, you know, if I needed her to. So, all right, but I forgot. We've played with Josh and Callan, so Callan's been there. Okay, so anybody that has ever seen me play golf, if I came home and I said, I had the best round ever today, I hit a hole-in-one, they look at me and be like, you're lying. You're lying through your teeth. Because every time we've ever seen you go play golf, you're lucky if you can get the ball even close to the green after three or four shots. You definitely did not get it on the green and in the hole in one shot. It did not happen, okay? But now, what if those same people were with me and witnessed it happen? Or what if I had a video of it happening? Now there's evidence. But if you take the entire body of evidence, all of the times I've ever been witnessed playing golf, and you have this one anomaly, according to this theory, you would be foolish to believe that that happened, even if you saw it happen, because the evidence of it happening one time is less than all the other times that the opposite happened. Does that make sense? Okay, same thing with winning the lottery. Because people don't win way more than they do win, you would be foolish to believe that somebody won, even if they showed you the winning ticket. Because historically, they would have shown you more losing tickets. Do you see where I'm going with that? So do you see where that argument is invalid?
Except there are those that make a hole in one, and somebody does win the lottery. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right, and some people have won multiple times. But so the point is that you would not be foolish to believe those things happened, even though they were one-off events, because the evidence was there that it happened. Does that make sense now?
Yeah.
You guys with me? Okay. All right, so this confuses believability with possibility. Okay? So just because it's not probable that it's going to happen or that it would happen doesn't mean that it wasn't possible and that it didn't happen. Does that make sense? All right. So what is and isn't a miracle? So we know that miracles are possible, but how do we know if we see one? So for an act of God to be an unmistakable sign from God, it would have to meet certain criteria, like that king's seal, right? God alone has infinite power, and so for the criteria to be true of miracles, it would need to be an instantaneous beginning of a powerful act as evidenced by the cosmological argument, such as the beginning of the universe, intelligent design and purpose, as evidenced by the teleological argument, the design of the universe for the purpose of supporting life and the specified and complex design of life itself, and the promotion of good or right behavior, as evidenced by the moral argument, the moral law. So in other words, a miracle is going to fit into all three of those, right? So basically, it has to be consistent with God's character, and it has to be consistent with what he has done, okay? So if you don't have the power, if it can be naturally explained, then it cannot be definitely identified as a miracle. It has to be unmistakably supernatural. The design component means any sign done without an obvious purpose, such as to confirm a truth or a messenger of truth or to bring glory to God, is probably not a sign from God. In other words, God doesn't just perform miracles for entertainment, right? Anytime you ever see God doing a miracle, there was a purpose behind it. And the moral component means that any sign connected with error or immorality cannot be a sign from God. Error and immorality are against God's nature because he is the unchanging standard of truth and morality. So with this criteria, we can identify what unusual events are true signs from God. And notice, We drew this from what we learned from God about the natural world. We didn't pull that from the Bible. However, the Bible agrees with our assessment by calling events that meet these same criteria as miracles. Brandon?
So does that mean that Jesus turning water into wine was not a miracle? Because that was basically for entertainment.
Well, when we say for entertainment, right? Okay, so you can say
His mama wanted him to do it. He didn't want to do it.
Well, you could say that wine at a wedding would be for entertaining the guests, right? So, yeah. But he didn't just do it as a party trick, right? So, you know, again, I'm not God, and so I can't necessarily speak to his timing. He did say it wasn't his time, but he honored his mother and did it anyways. And that was the beginning of his ministry. So,
okay, always remember this. There's a spiritual application behind everything Jesus did. Tim Keller preached a really good message called Lord of the Wine. And it was significant that the first miracle Jesus did was at a wedding because he was here to save his bride. And there was he wanted the festivities to be abundant and ongoing. And therefore that God spoke to us very clearly by that being his first miracle.
The wine ended up being better than the best that they had,
right?
Too. So that's...
Jed had something.
Well, I just want to think contextually about you said he didn't do it for entertainment, but he did it for a purpose. But look at the actions and the character of everybody of what was done for it through Moses and doing the miracles in front of the Pharaoh and all that, and let them plagues come. Pharaoh still saw it and hardened his heart and still chased after him. And the Israelites saw the Red Sea part, came through the Red Sea on dry ground, then complained the whole time in the desert. Then when they got to the mountain, after seeing all these miracles and provisions, then they got to the mountain and fashioned, they thought they were doing something good for the Father, and fashioned a golden calf, and he got mad at them for fashioning this calf. And then Christ is doing all these miracles and miracles, miracles, and the Pharisees are hardening their heart more and more and more and more until they crucified him. And so it's like, eventually, you know, that's funny that we're talking about the miracles and stuff. And it's like, you know, I was thinking the other day, it's kind of like that immediate gratification with a drug addict or something like that, or with our cooking, you know. We like the immediate gratification, and we don't even look at the miracle of the transformation on the inside of what he does and how much of a miracle. That's the actual miracle of the abundant life that he produces on the inside of us, and that's a transformation process that he even gives us that breath to have that. That's the real miracle of the transformation. And, I mean, we're all looking at this physical miracle with our own two eyes that we can do, but look at what that did for everybody in the past that hardened their heart, that did this. That wasn't good enough for them. That wasn't good enough for them to see it with their own two eyes when we completely miss the miracle of the transformation on what it does for us on the inside. And, you know.
So, and that's the thing, right, is even when God does provide or did provide miracles, there were some that believed and some that didn't, and it didn't matter how many he did or how big they were, and so that kind of brings us to the biggest miracle was the resurrection of Jesus, right? So he predicted that it would happen, and that resurrection was not done in a vacuum. It was not done for no reason. It displayed instantaneous power beyond natural capability, intelligent forethought and design, and a moral purpose, and he did it in context to where a man claiming to be from God and performing miracles along the way predicted it would happen. And in short, if the resurrection actually occurred, it has God's fingerprints all over it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Right? And so with that being said, we are out of time. So actually that's literally what I was about to close with. So, so according So we talk about infinite beings, right? You cannot have an infinite good being and an infinite evil being, right? So you have one infinite being, and then you can have other spiritual beings. You have angels, you have demons, etc., but they are not at that same level. And so according to the Bible, only God can create life and raise the dead. Even Pharaoh's magicians, who had imitated the first two plagues, couldn't imitate the third, which created life. These magicians acknowledge that the third plague was the finger of God. Satan can perform tricks better than the best magicians, and there are many examples of those in the Bible, but those tricks fail to meet the characteristics of a true miracle. As we can see, true miracles cause one to think more highly of God, tell the truth, and promote moral behavior. Counterfeit signs from Satan do not do this. They glorify the person ostensibly performing the sign, and they are often associated with error and immoral behavior. They also may not be immediate, instantaneous, or permanent. In short, only God performs true miracles. Satan does counterfeit miracles. So, next week, we are going to start exploring the New Testament, which tells us about Jesus, tells us about his claims, tells us about his life, his death and resurrection, and we're going to examine the credibility of the New Testament and whether we should believe it or not. So, there we go.